That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to my favourite hour of the entire week. It is That Money Show with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. You call me what you want. They all kind of point to the same direction, and that is money. So what is That Money Show? For all those of you that have never heard this show before, it's a bloody brilliant show. I'm guessing that the chances are, if you're listening to this, you have had zero education on the topic of money. You might be lucky. Someone in your family might have dropped a couple of gems of wisdom about money or financial literacy. But the likelihood is, if you're like me, you've never learned about it at school. You probably don't like talking about it. It might be a bit uncomfortable. So that's what we do here on this show. We talk about the personal finances. We discuss what's actually going on in the economy that is relevant to your back pocket. Because, yeah, I'm not going to lie, I also get bored by the news. So it's really important to actually know what affects you, what doesn't affect you. So we cut through the faff and discuss the topics that will actually impact you and you should know about. And of course, we also like to bring in some really cool guests. So coming up this week, we have Sam Sedit. She was a contestant on The Apprentice and founder of The Mummy Movement. And we also have Claire Moffat, a spokesperson at the Royal London Group, who's going to be discussing a really interesting study that came out about the cost of living crisis and its impact on young adults. Well, its impact on everyone, in particular related to growing and having a family. You might be watching this or listening to this in your teens or your early 20s and think, how is that relevant to me? But for the majority of us, a family is on the agenda at some point. And there's some interesting studies and things related to money that might be impacting that quite a little bit, a lot of it. Anyway, stick around. It's going to be a good show. And we're going to discuss plenty of things. And as always, the promise is if you listen to this show, you will be 1% better with your money every single week. And if you know the magic word compound interest, which we might discuss later in the show, you'll know 1% every single week. That is a significant return on your money come the end of the year. So let's dive straight in to the news. It's a great place to start. Is anything going on in the news? Is it all election? And we're actually going to discuss something politically related in a little bit. But for now, let's start with that little story I teased you with a moment earlier. And here's what's going on. It's this idea of more than one in five young adults having delayed having children or abandoned starting a family altogether as a result of the squeeze on finances. Now, I'm not actually going to dive too much into this topic because we've got Claire Moffat from the Royal London Group who actually did this study. Like, they're the ones that did this study to discuss the topic a little bit later. But I do want to sprinkle in a little bit of you so you can let that sit, let that simmer. And then when Claire jumps in, we can ask her lots of questions all about it because she's far more knowledgeable on the topic than I am. But here's what's going on. So obviously, we're all feeling that squeeze on finances. And we've had this study come out by, like I said, the Royal London Group to show us what and how has it affected people when it comes to starting a family. So here are some of the results about it. In particular, for people aged between 18 and 34, there seems to be a big change in plans to when you might want to start a family, again, because of finances. This is a really shocking sentence. Inflation means that families with a young with children have seen costs rise by about £1,000 a month since February 2023. £1,000 a month. Don't know about you, but it's sometimes often hard to find an extra £100 a month. So £1,000 a month, yeah, I can understand why that might be off-putting for people to consider starting a family or this idea that I need to push down the line. It's just not happening these days. Another result of the group saying that among those surveyed, most likely to be mortgage holders, with 44% saying they are likely to cut back on everyday spending to pay increased loan costs. So yeah, if you've got a mortgage, you're probably likely to have renewed it over the past few years. Off the back of that, that means your monthly outgoings are much higher because interest rates are higher. So you probably had it fixed for a number of years on a nice low rate. That's gone up. And now all of a sudden, your monthly outgoings are higher. So what does that actually mean? Well, your long-term life plans. Again, you might want to have had a child. You might still want to have children. But instead of thinking maybe you can start growing a family in your late 20s, this study is showing that more people are now considering it in the maybe their early to mid, even late 30s. It doesn't surprise me at all. Obviously, your earning power is meant to go up throughout your 20s, beyond your 30s. So, of course, that's going to be the chance that you might actually be able to settle down and have a family. I did a little bit of Googling just before I came on air. And one thing that I searched was, how much does it actually cost to raise a child in the UK? This is going to blow your mind. It blew my mind when I did it, and feel free to do a Google. So this is 2022 study, so it's probably gone up, bear in mind, because inflation has gone up quite significantly over the past 2 years. But the average cost of raising a child in the UK now ranges from £150,000 to £200,000 between the ages of 0 and 18. And this is actually an even more scary stat. That's £157,562 for couples, or £208,735 if you're a lone parent. So if you're a lone parent, raising a child is actually more costly than if you're a couple. I would assume that's because if you're a lone parent, you need to cover more, you know, childcare costs, you know, schooling at a younger age. If you're going to be going out for work, it's not like you can just have your partner look after that child that day, and you can alternate and save costs that way. You're probably going to have to go much higher in that side. And some of the things that will be covered are those costs, that crazy number that I just said, include things like food, housing, childcare, but not luxuries like vacations, gifts, or hobbies. So let me stress that again. These are basically for the essentials: food, housing, childcare, but not luxuries like vacations, gifts, and hobbies. Children will cost you, up until they're 18, somewhere between £150,000 to £200,000. Pretty crazy. I feel like that's self-explanatory as to why people might be pushing to having children slightly later. But we'll discuss that in a little bit with Claire. Anyway, what else is going on in the news? Well, I read this article on the BBC that said both Labour and the Conservatives are going to be keeping your income tax thresholds frozen until 2028. Where are we now? 2024. So we're 4 years. No changes to the income tax threshold. Now, you might just be like, boring, like, again, snooze, because it's something to do with taxes. Let me explain how that actually affects you. So, obviously, most people's salaries kind of creep upwards, at the very least with inflation. If inflation, let's say, is 2 or 3%, you're expecting to get that raise every single year. So, I'm going to show you, like, a bit of a case study, because I think that's the best way to show it. Let's say inflation goes up by 2% and your salary goes up by 2%. That means in real terms, your salary hasn't changed. The purchasing power of what you can do with your salary hasn't changed. You basically haven't got that raise. You've just kept up with inflation. But what that does mean for you, because the income tax thresholds haven't also gone up with inflation, is you are now paying more tax on earning the same equivalent salary. So more of your money falls now into that 20% tax bracket, or more of your money will fall into the 40% tax bracket. Therefore, you pay more of your hard-earned cash towards tax. Now, if they're freezing these thresholds until 2028, and bearing in mind that they came in 2021, that is 7 years of these tax bands, these tax thresholds not going up. I would love to do some quick maths with you, but I mean, even off the top of my head, currently the lowest tax threshold is £12,570. Once you start earning over that, you start to have to pay tax. If that went up by just 2%, I think that's somewhere in the region of, I mean, let me show some quick maths, in the region of £250 that should have gone up just in 1 year. Then the year after that, it should have gone up maybe, let's say, £255, 4, 5, 6, 7. In other words, over several years, over that 7 year period, you're looking at that threshold should have been at least £1,000 or so higher than it currently is. It isn't. So you have to pay £1,000. That's, let's take that, 20%, £200 more in tax just because they are not moving it. And that's only if you fall in the 20% tax bracket. If you fall in the 40% tax bracket, that's even more crazy. And now imagine you're someone that sits, let's say you're earning £49,000, your salary goes up with inflation. So again, you're not earning more money in real terms. Your money is exactly the same, but now you're falling into the 40% tax bracket because that hasn't moved up. That's exactly where it is, £50,270. More tax, you wouldn't have fallen into that 40% tax bracket had it moved up with inflation, but it hasn't. It's been frozen. And both Labour and Conservatives are going to be sticking to that. Why? Well, it's just probably because they want more money for tax. It's an easy kind of stealth tax. And what a stealth tax means is that it's a tax that they're not actively putting on you. They're just not changing something that will cause you to pay more tax. So it's not like they're saying to you, oh, we're raising the income tax rate thresholds from 20% to 22%. Then the country goes up in arms. Well, you don't want to pay more tax. No way. But if they secretly just be like, we're freezing the tax thresholds, you're like, ah, you're not going to think about something they didn't change. Therefore, you're paying more tax. Stealth means like they're doing it secretly. And of course, there are huge costs for the government to repay. They borrowed huge amounts of money, especially throughout 2021, 2022 to deal with the pandemic. And they need as much of that back in their pockets to cover the costs of running the country. So they're just going to be quietly about it. And this is me alerting you to the fact that fiscal drag is a real thing and it's happening to you and it will continue to happen to you till 2028, regardless of if either of the two big parties come into power. Yay, more tax. Even with Rishi's little national insurance rebate that we're all getting, where national insurance got cut by like 4% recently, you're still probably taking home less money thanks to these fiscal drag tax threshold squeezes. Yay. And then one last quick story to leave you with before we bring in some guests and you don't have to listen to me mumble on into your ear holes, is the idea that energy bills are also going to be remaining significantly higher for at least the next 6 years. Why is this? As gas-fired power stations age and as the construction of new nuclear plants is delayed. So basically, new cheaper energy, delayed. Old energy becomes more costly as they're getting older and aren't running as efficiently. So over the next 6 years, we have energy bills to remain significantly higher. I'm assuming that they're already quite high. So that's not lovely news to hear. We all probably wanted them to drop back. Yes, they have got a little bit better, probably over the past 12 months, our energy bills, but not anything great. So what does this mean for you? What should you be considering when it comes to energy bills? Well, you need to start factoring in. It's a really dangerous mindset with your finances to think that things are going to return to how they were. So for now, you can kind of try and, you know, figure things out, because one day maybe the interest rates are going to drop back down. Again, maybe the energy bills, your energy bills are going to drop back down. The key for really strong personal finances is to assume what's currently going on is the least you should expect. In fact, you should prepare yourself for worse scenarios than the current scenario by doing things like building emergency funds, rebudgeting to allocate things to the current way you're spending money. Don't just assume that you can get by for a few months until things return back to normal, because one thing I will promise you is that we're not seeing things like 1%, 2% interest rates coming back anytime soon. And as this study showed, we're not seeing lower energy bills coming back anytime soon. So reshift that mindset. Don't think that the norm is coming back, because we are in a new norm once and for all. Anyway, on that jolly note, coming up after this, I told you it's not just going to be me talking. We've got Sam Sedeet, who was on The Apprentice, and she is also the founder of The Mummy Movement. Most of us probably have mums in some way, shape or capacity. Could be quite interesting. I'm excited to get her on and to have a chat. So stick around and we'll catch you in a minute.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hey!
FUBAR Radio presents
Access All Areas.
Mark from Married at First Sight UK.
See, at the wedding, you told Sean you were 26, but you're actually 36.
Oh, yeah.
So drop in that decade. We ain't gone 1 or 2 years either side. What was going through your head when you thought, I'm going to shave off 10 years?
A 26. Third of your life.
Yeah.
It was instant reaction. As soon as anyone says to me, how old are you? I'm like 26. I just stopped counting after 26. Would I have told him? Probably not.
No. Yeah. Ever?
Well, maybe when we're 80 years old and we've got the grandkids running round.
Except you wouldn't be 80 years old. You'd be 98.
I'd be 26 still. I'd be going around the corner for some more injections.
Politics Uncensored.
Joining me now, the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, MP. And there you are, stood with hundreds of thousands of people at Glastonbury singing, you know, Jeremy Corbyn. What is that like?
It was quite extraordinary. It was an amazing experience, and I was very pleased we did it. The office got very excited about Glastonbury. Every single person in the office thought it was necessary for them to be at Glastonbury with me.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah.
Every single one said it was really necessary for me to come. The
Dating Show. I'm friends with a fair few exes, and I think you can be friends with an ex, but I genuinely do. But I do think that it's timing is everything with that.
I think it depends what you cast as a friend.
Yeah,
are you talking about someone you're going to hang out with on your sofa? Like, if you've already shagged, isn't that a bit weird?
Think that's a different level of friend. I think that's a different level of friend. You can be friends with someone, you can't be like best fucking friends with someone. I mean, I've got exes that I talk to about their current partners and whatever else, and they'll tell me about that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't say, oh, do you want to come over for fucking Chinese and chill on the sofa?
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio presents.
Access all areas.
We've got the lovely Joel joining us now from MISC. Joel, you are live on Zoom. How are you, babe?
Hello.
So have you officially emigrated now to Chelsea?
I guess so, but hopefully not for too long. I'm more of like an East London girl. I like culture, and I feel like Chelsea is deprived of culture, and it's deprived of arts, and it's deprived of all these things that I love.
So you are Shoreditch rather than Kensington?
Oh, 1,000,000%.
Every Wednesday from 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to FUBAR Radio. Sam will be joining us shortly in the studio, but I did have to rush through a few of those stories from just before, which means I would like to share with you a few more details. And in particular, I want to answer any questions. So those of you listening right now don't realise, I do go live on my socials as well, on my own personal socials during these shows, and try and get some Q&As going in. So I'm going to talk about a little bit of a topic, but if you are watching live on the socials right now, I do want to answer your questions live on air right now. I will answer them. So right now I can see the latest question is, someone just wrote, I have £800, I have no clue what to do, and I'm 16. Probably a little bit of a vague question. If you have £800 and you're 16 years old, you're well above the median of how much money you should have as a 16-year-old, because I'm assuming you live at home and have zero costs. So you're doing pretty well. But if you do have specific questions, you can head over to socials and ask them right there. But yes, I will now be joined by Sam in the studio. And this is going to be a great chat. So stick around and let's have a chat. Anyway, hello, Sam. How are you doing? Can you hear me loud and clear?
I'm good. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly. Thank you for joining That Money Show.
No, thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Well, firstly, how are you doing today? How are things? Not the best weather compared to yesterday, but we'll make do.
No, I'm having a lovely day. Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm doing well. Can't complain when I'm sitting here in the studio. They've got the aircon on, so I'm happy. But I'd love to dive straight in. I mean, you were a contestant on The Apprentice, and for many people, they kind of want to know behind the scenes, like, what is that like? Because we watch it from our screens, but we probably only see like 1% of what actually happens on the show. So let's start with your business proposal, because that's what you need to get on The Apprentice. So what was the business that you wanted Lord Sugar to invest into?
Absolutely. So, So I'm a pre and postnatal fitness instructor, and at the time I did online workouts just for mums and mums to be, and my business proposal was to then turn that and develop that into an app. And then since coming off the show, I've gone and done it myself. So
you didn't need Lord Sugar.
Yeah, so really, really happy with that.
That's incredible. So I'm not quite your demographic, but I probably know plenty of people that are or could do with exactly what you do. So how is the business going? How has it flourished since being on the show, seeing as you've done it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, between us, one of the reasons I went on the show was just to get good exposure for my business. Yeah,
I can't promise we can keep that between us. I think the people listening might be in on that secret now as well. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, the exposure's been great, and I just wanted to, I already I already had a good following on my socials of mums and mums-to-be, and I've just like broadened that now to reach more mums, and it's been lovely. I'm just creating a nice community and for us all. Plus, I've had a few other extra audiences that I never had before. That is a bit strange to me, but I've had all the mums, but I've had a few blokes now, and that's all very odd to me now.
Yeah, I was going to throw some question marks in, but I suppose you're still aiming at a specific demographic, and if other people want to join in, why not, right? It's all fitness, it's all fun.
More the merrier.
Exactly, and it's good for business as well. Probably a weird one to kind of advertise, but it is what it is. Yeah. So it sounds like you got your objective out of being on The Apprentice. Like, you kind of were able to share off your business acumen and your incredible business idea, and it resonated, I suppose, with the nation really well. But how was it generally just being on The Apprentice? What is it like behind the scenes?
Do you know what, before you go on it, you know, it's easy to watch it. When you watch it, it's like 100 hours worth of filming fitted into 1 hour. So when you watch it, it's always the common thing of, oh my God, they're, you know, I could do so much better than that.
You've hit the nail on the head.
This is going to be bloody easy. I thought this is going to be fun. Then we go into the process of actually getting on the show, and it is hardcore. Like, there's stages. It's almost like preparation for if you actually get onto the show, because once you go onto the show, you get stripped of everything, your phone, your laptop, your passport, the lot. You get thrown into a house with a load of people you've only just met, and you're doing the longest days filming every... It was intense, and it was crazy, and it's something you'll never experience really most of your life. You get chucked into situations as well you never do, like me, you know, going to the Highlands. Number one, I'd never think to go there. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful, and I'm walking through and diving into a freezing cold gorge, and like, that is just not a bit of me, but I would never have done it otherwise. So I've taken away so many amazing experiences from it. And it just really pushes you to your limit. It's very intense. But when you watch it back, you just laugh because you think, blimey, they make it look like we had a little doddle.
Honestly, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you were saying, when you watch The Apprentice, you sit there thinking to yourself, how are they struggling on this? Or how are they having these discussions? Or, you know, how can they not realise the obvious? But, I mean, obviously, with the magic of editing, they can make it look like however it likes. And you've also said, like, you're probably sleep-deprived. You're working with people that you've never met, don't know anything about them, and trying to work as a team together. And you're all obviously, in a way, not working as a team. You're also competitors. So there's that element as well. And trying to mix all of that together... to appear competent on TV. I can imagine that, like, yeah, there's probably a reason why I haven't applied for the show just yet at all. So let's kind of switch lanes for a second. So that was The Apprentice in your experience. It sounds like it was bloody awesome, but also bloody tiring. Speaking about bloody awesome, but bloody tiring, how do you find balancing running your business whilst also being a mum? Because I feel like that is a question mark that people will always ask you.
Absolutely. So I'm just such a massive advocate of this, because when you do become a mother, it's like, it's not as easy just to be like, right, let's get back to work. Let's sort of like, you have to find more flexible working companies that offer that. So 9 times out of 10, a lot of women do look to then start their own business, and it's incredibly difficult to start your own business, especially albeit being a mum as well and having to look after kids. So when you first go into it, the juggle is real. It's a lot. I'm actually hosting an event this week for mums in business, and I'll be doing this regularly as well. And it's something that we're going to, you know, you just sit down and chat about all the faces you struggle. So you really just have to, the thing with running a business and being a mum, especially when you've got young children, is learning to just adapt to that. You can't just crack on and do an email here and there. You have to play it around the kids playing ball or the kids' school time or the kids', you know, nap time or whatever it might be. And I think it is all about adapting to this new life, that you can't just jump back into work that easily, starting something new and just going for it, but knowing that it's not going to be as easy as if when you didn't have kids, basically.
Yeah,
but
of course.
In the end, once you get used to that, it's incredible. And to be able to then have a business and run it around being a present mum at the same time, you can do both. It's just learning to adapt. And that's what I love about it.
I mean, you're showing by example, right? You share your journey with people, you explain how you're doing it. And I think it's so important to always show the difficult parts of building a business, because obviously it's so attractive. You see all these like entrepreneurs doing these cool business elements, making loads of money, but there's often things going on behind the scenes, like you said, managing, you know, your family relationships, your kids, the school runs, the pickups, the dinners, spending just general quality time with them. There's so much going on. So that's kind of the tough side, but let's speak about the good part. So you've built this incredible business. What is your biggest success like that you can share with people that you've had to date?
I think my biggest success is, I mean, just, I think starting a business and actually now getting to the, so starting a business with very young children and being able to grow it to the point where I'm able to have a steady income, which I would get from a full-time job, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, but also being able to be able to look after my kids. And I know that it's so difficult, and it didn't come easy for me at all. And so I work extremely hard, and I'm constantly juggling everything, but I feel like the hard work pays off. It doesn't come easy, but it pays off. And that is my biggest success, knowing that I've now built a business around being able to also be a mum at the same time. And yeah, I feel like it's easier said than done. And a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I wish I could do that. But it's all about having the confidence to take that first step and knowing that, yeah, it won't be easy, but if you work hard, you can really achieve it and be really successful at it too.
I love that, because you also probably had a lot of pressure on you because you are called the mummy movement, right? And imagine building or trying to build a successful business whilst also probably having the pressure put on you by your audience to prove that you're a good mum as well. I mean, because you've got it in your name and I mean, I can't even imagine trying to balance those two. I mean, clearly I can't. I'm sitting here without kids as a guy. But that's just one element. I want to ask you one final question, which is kind of a really exciting one to anyone listening. And being someone who set up a successful business, what could you share to someone else who's out there tempted or about to start their own?
I think if you have an idea that you feel passionate about, it has to be something you have a passion for. If you just want to do something just to make a quick buck or a bit of money, you won't, in the long run, it just doesn't work. Find something that you have a real passion for. And even if it doesn't make you good money at the start, in the long run, you'll be so much happier and you'll end up being richer than anything. So yeah, my main thing is just, if you're going to start a business, have a real passion for it.
Yeah, I'm gonna double down on that, because passion ultimately drives the key word for a successful business, which is consistency. You got to be able to do this thing day in, day out, when there's zero success, when there's no one applauding you, when there's no money coming in, and you got to keep building and building and building, because like you said, success doesn't happen overnight. And so the word passion, I think, is an essential ingredient to any successful business. Anyway, thank you so much for joining. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. And I think that the audience have learned a lot from what you've had to share.
Thank you so much for having me.
No worries. Well, how was that, everyone? Just some incredible advice from Sam, sharing all things about being a mother, balancing it with building a successful business. You might recognize her as well from being on The Apprentice. And that's just, again, another sprinkle of the incredible guests and the incredible expertise and experience that we like to give you here on The Money Show, on That Money Show even. Now, money tip of the week. I love this part of the show because what we like to do is give you something practical, give you something quick that you can go and do right now to be better with your money. Now, this one actually comes, I will admit it, I watched a TikTok like 2 days ago, but I watched a TikTok about something that I already do. So I'm happy to confirm that this money tip isn't stolen. It's just, let's just say, reminded. and it's all about the TfL. So if you live in London, or if you've ever travelled around in London, bus, train, bus again, those are my forms of transport when it comes to TfL. You probably, whether you realise it or not, have been overcharged. And what I mean by overcharged is you might tap in, tap out all the time, but sometimes you're tapping doesn't get registered. So I'm always tapping in and tapping out of every station, obviously. I don't break the law. Anyway, we don't advocate for that on this show. But you can kind of go online and type in like TfL Oyster. You create an account on the first link, whatever it is. You go and add your cards that you would have tapped in and out of. So I'm assuming you use kind of like a contactless payment. You add all of that and it will show you a list of journeys that it is not aware of. Let me get my wording right. Is not aware of whether the starting point or the ending point. Now, if they don't know where you've started or where you've ended, they will charge you the maximum amount on that journey. All you've got to do is say, I'm fairly certain there's a checkpoint. I'm fairly certain I checked out and tapped out of this station, or I tapped in to this station. Scroll down, press the station, and you will be refunded to the correct level of that journey. I've probably been refunded somewhere in the region of £200 to £300 just because I keep up to date on my TfL account. There's your money tip of the week. Go and save some money right now and then take that money and save it. Please do not spend it. Anyway, we will now be joined. Well, not we will now be joined. Soon after this break, I have Claire Moffat coming to join us. She's a spokesperson at the Royal London Group to discuss the recent study about building a family under the current cost of living crisis. We'll catch you then.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
FUBAR Radio presents
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Joining me now is Millie Gooch, author and founder of Sober Girl Sobriety Society. I need to know what is so bad about dating sober.
I think it's just terrifying when it's something that you're not used to, because when I was drinking and dating, you know, like, you use it to calm your nerves, you use it for confidence, you rely on it. And I think that's the one thing I realised when I stopped drinking, is how much I really relied on alcohol. I was always kind of saying, you know, like, oh, I'm not dependent on it, but for my confidence I was really. But I also think there's so many benefits to it. Like, I used to go on so many dates when I was drinking, I'd be like, they are the one, and then I'd meet them a few weeks later sober and I'd be like, we've got nothing in common. What was going through my mind? I'd be like, oh, it was because I was drunk.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Harpreet, how are you, my love?
I'm great, thank you. How are you? It looks fun in there.
I want to talk about this because obviously you met your partner on The Apprentice. When did you start to get that feeling, I'm into him and this is more than just a banter or a friendship? Because it's a close environment being on a show like that, isn't it?
I really wish I could sit here and give loads of juicy gossip. Actually, we used to secretly meet in the laundry room on the show, but we didn't. And when I actually last spoke with yourselves, I think it was right after I'd won, we weren't even flirting, never mind dating. First time that I thought I actually fancied him was when I watched him on TV and I watched episode one.
How funny.
Hang on. You know, he's actually really good looking.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
And joining me in the studio, we have Deputy Leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping, Zach?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So you're hoping for four MPs in the general. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's absolutely the minimum at what we're
I don't want to be Piers Morgan here, but will you take I don't have £1,000, will you take a £100 bet with me that you'll get four MPs?
Well, I do everything in politics to talk about the harms of gambling, so for me to very place good. A bet on there would be pretty, you know, pretty horrendous.
Before we had you on, we discussed with the producers as to whether I should do the bet joke. And I said I would, because I had every faith that you would answer it in the way I expect a politician of any moral
standing. We should also talk about cryptocurrency, which also is very problematic.
Rishi, if you're listening, mate, that's how you answer a betting question.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show. As I have been teasing throughout the entire show, we are about to have an incredible conversation with Claire Moffat, the spokesperson at Royal London Group. But let me give you a quick refresher before I introduce her. there's been some research done by the Royal London Group, a big financial resilience report. And one thing that came out of it is more than one in five young adults have delayed having children or abandoned starting a family altogether as a result of the squeeze on their finances. In other words, that kind of would-be age bracket of 18 to 34 would-be parents have started to change their plans for their family. Anyway, on that jolly note, Claire, thank you very, very much for joining me in the studio. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. So, of course, you are part of the Royal London Group, so you're aware of this financial resilience report, and I had a flick through. I want to have a deep read of this because, I mean, nothing it really says is crazily surprising, but it's still quite upsetting. We know we're in a cost of living crisis. I think this report just confirms in numbers the actual depth of it. What are your thoughts on this study as a whole?
So I think, you know, we've been tracking how people have been responding to the financial challenges of the rising cost of living for more than 2 years. So we've got really rich data about this now. And I think that what's clear now is that we're starting to see people making changes to their longer term life plans. So when food prices were increasing, when energy was increasing, we saw people cut back. They changed their spending habits, they changed their shopping habits. But I think this time what we're seeing is that there are major life decisions being delayed because people are weighing up, can I afford to do this? Can I afford to act on plans that we've already made? And you know, you mentioned that specifically for this age group, you know, it's just over kind of one in five have said that this has affected their family planning decisions. Now, that's compared to, as an overall group, one in 10 people said that it affected them.
Yeah, pretty stark analysis. And I think that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because this is, I suppose, the first signs that we're not in like a crisis anymore. We're in a just changed way of living. For moving forward, it's completely altered the psychology of this younger generation and the way you interact with money. It's not just like, okay, for a few years, let me cut back on doing ABC, maybe no holidays for 2 years. This is like your life plans of growing a family, having, you know, a children, maybe two, maybe three, whatever luxurious position that you are to kind of have that means. So this study, I mean, in your opinion, isn't looking like a little bit of a trend. This is not just a cost of living crisis. This is a complete change in financial psychology of the younger generation.
So definitely we're seeing through our data and other data that cost of living expenses are a major factor in decisions about delaying starting a family. We've seen studies looking at the fact that housing insecurity is also really important to people as well. So people might not want to have children while they're renting, or they might want to wait until they can afford to sell a one-bedroom flat they have and move to a more family-sized house. But of course, there is almost, you know, also this general sense that people are delaying having children until later in life. Maybe they want to get ahead in their careers. People have, you know, student debts, for example. And, you know, it's not too dissimilar a mentality, though, that people just want to make sure that they have a certain amount of security before they start a family. You know, and we are seeing that kind of the trend is that mothers are older before they start having children. So that's certainly something that, you know, we are seeing more and more older mothers as well.
Yeah, I do appreciate that you've mentioned quite a few reasons to why this is happening. Obviously, the cost of living crisis might be, like, as you might say, the cherry on the cake, something that's pushing things even further. But I feel like you mentioned, this idea of moving families to an older age has been something that was going on well before the cost of living crisis. As you mentioned, key things like wanting to be in the right property, being more secure in your holistic lifestyle, maybe having more aspirations to do throughout your 20s before you consider settling down. And one in particular that you mentioned was career. Of course, when you have a child, that has huge impacts on career. And some people might want to make sure that they've got to a certain position within a career before they consider taking a step back to have a child, because obviously that's a part of it. What are the older generations saying from this study? And by older generation, I mean those people that currently have children and are having to deal with the effects of higher prices. They've done the decision making, like the children are there now. They're now living with it, with the consequences. So how are they coping?
Well, we know for parents who've got young children, then childcare costs, that's a real concern because they can be really high. And when we did the research, it was before the change in April. So there was a change in April, and that meant that parents who are working and have children who are two, they could qualify for 15 hours of free childcare. Now, that's based in England and during term time. But people are spending more on childcare than they were a year ago. So the costs have risen by £265 a month compared to a year ago, which is, you know, almost double, actually, kind of the sample size as a whole. Also, people are spending a lot more on food, £173 a month. So although we're starting to see inflation reduce, actually, you know, food costs are still expensive. Now, I've got three teenagers, actually. They eat a lot. You know, it's expensive to maintain children. So those kind of costs, you know, are expensive. They use more energy in a house as well. You need to be heating your house, things like that. But definitely the biggest rise that we've seen has been in housing costs. Now, that can be renting, rent costs or mortgage costs. So these have gone up by £433 a month on average for parents in that age group. And some people might not have been affected by that as much yet. So you might have had a fixed rate deal on your mortgage and it's not expired. We know that there's still a lot of people in the second half of this year who are going to be in that position, and they could see their mortgage payments increase by a lot. And that kind of, you know, the interest rates, even if they do start to reduce, and that looks like something we might see, they're not going to reduce to the levels they were 2 or 3 years ago. So people might have bought a property at a few years ago, thinking that they would be moving on by this point in time, and actually they can't move on. So people maybe have had children and they're living in properties which aren't ideal for them.
Yeah, and I think the scary thing that came to mind when you were saying that was the idea that we're now, let's say, two and a half, 3 years into this period where housing prices have started to shoot up compared to the previous decade, which means for the majority of people that fix, let's say, on a 5-year term, we're probably maybe still got 50% of people to feel those consequences. So whilst you might have said like the cost of living crisis is getting under control for now, and, you know, things are setting into a new norm, and, you know, some things are dropping back down, you know, you've seen the energy price cap come bring that kind of price back down, you're seeing it, mortgage rates and interest rates stabilize to an extent so that it's not so much uncertainty on that side. But 50% of, let's say, young parents, because they'll probably be the people who are, you know, entered mortgages for the first time once they started to have children as well, or just prior to that, 50% of those are probably about to get hit and about to have their own cost of living crisis up until, what are we now talking, 2026, 2027, till the back end of that comes through. So are we, like, have we seen the full effect of this just yet? Or are you, is your study and your kind of understanding of this that we're kind of seeing it filter through, but there's a huge proportion of this country that maybe haven't had that quite hit them just yet?
I think when we looked last year, we could see that people were becoming worried about this. So they might not have been affected yet, but it was something that was a real concern. So we moved from people being concerned about things like food shopping and their energy to mortgage and rent. That's a real concern. And as you see, if, you know, if you were at a point where you were renegotiating a mortgage deal, then that's something that could have affected you right now, but it still could be something that is still to come up. And I think that, you know, it's really about, you know, people might be thinking, well, what should I do? And we've got some really good information on our website about mortgages, you know, what help the banks are offering, when you can look at renegotiating your mortgage deals. So I think it's really important that people do read up and find out about what they can do so they can make sure they can get the best deals. Or whether, you know, because we might see interest rates reduce a bit, it's about finding out that information so that you're in a bit of a stronger position before you take some of these decisions.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power. And so the earlier you can start considering this information, the better. Obviously, the information might be between two bad choices, but you can at least do something to appease one of those two sides. And yeah, I kind of thing that I would point people towards the information you just said. Try and gather as much information as you can on that topic so that when it does come round to you, maybe you are that person that secured a great rate in 2021. Come 2026, this is going to be something that will most likely affect you. Now, don't just think that 2026 is miles away. Who knows what interest rates are going to be by that point? Probably start considering it now, redistributing your, you know, what you're doing with your money, your savings, your spending, your needs, your wants, all those kind of categories, so that you are so well prepared and there's not an unexpected bill or an unexpected rise in a bill that's about to hit you. I know that you're also quite well versed on the idea of savings and pensions. How are you seeing these being hit over the past 2 years? Has the rate that people are contributing towards their pensions completely dropped? Because I can imagine a bunch of young people entering the workforce now for the first time are going, I'm not contributing towards my pension. I can't afford to give away that extra 100, 200 quid a month towards something that I'm not going to see for 60 years.
So it's really interesting because actually that's not what we've seen. So we did, you know, when we asked people, what do you plan on cutting back on? Sometimes they did see things like pension contributions, but actually that wasn't acted upon. So, you know, when we've sort of looked through the last 2 years, it's been about a 4 or 5% of people have actually cut back on pension contributions. Now, there could be a variety of different reasons for that. It doesn't come out of your bank account. So it's not like looking, you know, we always see that actually looking at what you're spending and what you can cut back on is a good thing to work out, well, actually, am I spending on things that maybe don't need multiple subscriptions or a gym membership if you don't go or something like that. But your pension comes off your salary. So before you get that money in your bank account. So actually, we're not seeing a reduction in that. And I think younger people especially, they know that actually they're going to have to work probably for longer and they might not fully understand pensions. I always laugh and say that part of my job is kind of, it's like translating, it's like a foreign language because it does seem like something really, really complex. But actually the sooner you start saving into a pension, the better. The younger you are, the less you have to save. So if you don't do anything until your 40s, you're going to need to save more every month to have the same amount in retirement. So that isn't something that we've seen reduce. And that is a good thing because if we're in a, you know, we've been through a cost of living crisis, as you mentioned, we're still in this kind of financial uncertainty, interest rates, mortgage rates. What we are finding is people aren't buying properties until they're older. We're going to see mortgages last for longer, sort of 35 years plus. So people could be retiring with a mortgage, which isn't normally what happens now. So most people would have paid off their mortgage. But if you're not saving into a pension now, it just means there's going to be more of a crisis in the future.
I mean, this might be completely wrong, but in my head, in a way, I might suspect one of the reasons for this lack of like changes in the pensions that you're seeing from your research, is it anything to do with lack of financial literacy? So people don't understand pensions. So they might not even consider the idea that they're having, because we have auto-enrollment in the UK, right? So you are automatically put onto paying a pension until you opt out of paying a pension. Now, like you said, most people just focus on the amount that's adding into their bank account. They might not even check their pay slip in the first place to notice this pension contribution. And if they do, they might not really understand where it's coming from. Is it that's coming from their, you know, their gross pay, the pay before the before any tax is taken off of it? I mean, is there any suspicion towards that being a reason? Lack of literacy. In other words, kind of ignorance around the fact they're paying into a pension, so therefore they don't change it.
Oh, definitely, I think. And financial confidence is key to making good decisions about your future. And so, you know, I think when we've done other studies, we've found out that younger people, when we've asked similar questions across different ages, then it's something that they don't know as much about. And I think that's just over kind of as you get a bit older. I think it's quite funny now that my friends never always thought pensions and things like that were dull. I'm 46 now and lots of my friends are suddenly being really interested in asking lots of questions. And that's what happens as you kind of pass the stage where your, you know, children are growing up a bit and you start thinking about the future. But when you're in your early 20s, then that maybe isn't as much of a priority. But I think the more we can help with, you know, education, financial confidence, and especially for women, actually. So we find that, you know, there's a massive gender pensions gap. And some of that goes back to actually, and we found another research that we did that in kind of the family home, that there might be conversations about long-term saving with sons, but not always with daughters. So actually kind of having these conversations in a family is great. If it can't, you know, that won't be the way for everybody, but kind of at school, having some discussions about finances, even things like you mentioned payslips. Actually kind of people understanding what their payslip means, what's on their payslip, you know, kind of what does gross and net mean. And actually, you know, they know what comes into their bank account, but it's this wider financial education piece that I think is really key, because it's not the situation it was years ago when actually you worked in the same job for a long time, you retired and you got an amount of money, about maybe half your what your salary was, and that was guaranteed for the rest of your life and you didn't actually really have to engage with anything. Younger people are going to have to engage. It's their responsibility to grow this pot of money and then to use that in their retirement. So it's really important.
Yeah, I love that note that you said about the payslip. Someone's probably looking at their payslip right now being like, 1257L, what are these not? What's... So yeah, I mean, the only thing that we can advocate on this show is to start taking an interest. It's really well and easily explained on pretty much most platforms nowadays. A quick Google will give you the answers you need in layman's terms. So I would highly advocate people to start doing a little bit of research and Googling into the things that they're hearing us talk about that they might kind of question, because this is the first time they're hearing them. I want to ask you one final question for today. And it's a bit of a reversal to discussing the down and the negativity around the current crisis that we're living through. Someone who is listening to this that wants to start preparing and you know, really taking control of their finances, do you have any top tips for maybe planning or even maintaining that idea of having a family in the future? Because, I mean, I'm just going to throw a number out here. I did a quick Google before, and the average child until they're 18 costs somewhere in the region in the UK of £150,000 to £200,000 over that period, from various different bits of research. So that's a lot of money, and it might scare a lot of people into a family. But do you have any tips that someone can take if they would like to prepare or start preparing that for that stage of life?
I think that, you know, people do want a bit more certainty and want to feel a bit more security. And we mentioned that earlier. I think it's always good to be looking at kind of budgeting, how much is coming in, how much is going out, and what can you be saving into. And, you know, when people have a child, there's often maternity leave, paternity leave, and so salaries reduce during that time. So actually, even if it's just trying to, you know, save some money to make sure that during that time when you're not going to be getting 100% of pay, that there's some money for that, or whether it's savings for a bigger property. So it's about, you know, really kind of looking at what you're spending now and what can you be saving, and also how are you saving that. So you know, if it's just sitting in a bank account with getting not very much interest, actually could you be doing something better with that? And you mentioned that there's lots of resources available. You know, there's the government-backed Money Helper website, which I think is really good for lots of information about different things, whether, you know, it's things like saving money into an ISA or looking at, you know, different kind of bank accounts and things. And I think as well, if you do have debt, then, you know, if say you've got an overdraft and you're going into that a lot, then what can you do about that? So could you maybe consolidate some debt? So sort of sorting out these type of things now so that you can make some plans for the future, I think. And, you know, it is about, you know, I always kind of laugh and say there's well, certainly in my situation, and it always felt like there was never a right time to have a baby, that, you know, and if I'd known it was £150,000, I think there wouldn't have been three, that was for sure. But I think that it's, you know, having that security of a home is really, really important, and making sure that, you know, you've got the savings that you need, and can be as well prepared as you, you know, financially as you can be, because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, childcare is so expensive as well. So it's taking all of these things into account and just kind of working out the situation now and actually looking at those plans for the future, making those plans, and working out what you can save.
Couldn't have put it better myself. Well, Claire, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you coming down here. And hopefully we left some people with some positive actions to take rather than this doom and gloom that they probably keep on hearing me go on about on this show. So thank you for your time. And that was really insightful.
Thank you.
Brilliant. So that was Claire Moffat from the Royal London Group discussing this concept of, well, financial security when it comes to building a family. So I hope you learned something there. Now, I do want to dive into what we like to call scam of the week. This isn't where we scam you. This is where we look at a scam and we break it down so that you do not fall for it. This comes from a TikTok video. Again, I do a lot on TikTok, so I get a lot of my knowledge from here. And someone was talking about a scenario. They were selling a couch. I believe it was on Facebook Marketplace. And they believe they got scammed. How did this happen? Well, they were contacted by a pretty normal looking account. This can happen. They were told that the person couldn't pay in cash. Could they bank transfer? They'd obviously shared their address with the person to pick up the item of the couch. They then shared their sort code and account number with said person. And it was only when the person started to ask for like an email address, they realized that something was off here. Best avoid this scenario. So, how can you avoid this idea of being scammed through a Facebook marketplace? Well, number one is perhaps don't share your specific address until the money has been transferred. So you can share the region or the area you're in so they know where they're picking it up from. But until everything's been confirmed, all the details have been confirmed, don't do that. Number two is, I think the biggest thing that the person was scared about when it came to this topic was the idea that they'd share their account details, so sort code, account number, with someone else. Now, this is the generic details you share with someone, a friend, a family, a stranger, when they need to transfer you money. So what can someone do with that information? Not a lot is the truth. So there wasn't so much fear that needed to be kind of like had around what was going on here. Someone can theoretically set up a direct debit with that information. Number one, you'll probably notice it. So that's a monthly payment of something going out every single month. So number one, you'll probably notice it from the first month. So you can count the second month. Number two, the direct debit guarantee means that if you contact your bank, if you see a direct debit leaving that you believe is fraudulent, they will cancel it and refund you pretty much straight away. I think there's a guarantee that covers that. So the truth is, can someone do a lot of damage with those two pieces of detail? Not really. There's not a lot to be feared about. That's just something to share. Now, I am ready to answer some questions. At the end of every show, I like to answer your questions. So these are the ones that maybe you're too embarrassed to ask, the ones that you are uncomfortable asking, or just things that generally have been on your mind for a while and you don't quite know where to ask them. So remember, you can always DM us on @thatmoneyshow. If you have any questions, stupid, clever, detailed, not detailed, and we will get back to you and try and answer as many as we can. But we're going to dive straight in. So if you are watching this live, you can ask questions right now and I will answer them. But the first question is, can you explain what compound interest is? Compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world, according to Albert Einstein. That's a rumor. No one's actually sure if he actually said it because I didn't hear it with my own ears. But compound interest is this idea that when you earn interest from whatever it is, a savings account, an investment, you keep that in. So your money is now from £100. Let's say you're up to £110. If you earn 10% again on that money a year later, 10% now becomes £11 rather than the £10 it was originally. So you're now on £121. Now, that sounds like not a lot of difference. But if you are putting money away consistently and having compound interest effect on it after a large period of time, we're talking 20, 30, 40 years, you can start to see significant differences. So let me put that into perspective for you. Let's say you have an account and you've saved £10,000 and you're earning 10% on it. Well done. You have £1,000 in interest at the end of the year. That's really good. Now, let's say over 40 years, you managed to get that account to £900,000. Don't know how you have done that, but that would have been very impressive. 10% that year would now be £90,000 of interest. Now that is compound interest. Now how you get from the 10,000 original amount to the 900,000 obviously is a lot of consistent saving, a lot of putting money away, but also the interest that you've earned every single year to get to that point, which has just grown and grown and grown exponentially. That is what compound interest is. It is magic. It is the reason you need to start saving and investing and putting money towards your pension as young as possible, because time is your best friend. The next question that we're getting in right now from socials is, what actually is a net worth and how do I calculate mine? Your net worth is, this is quite funny because everyone's like, oh, the net worth of millionaires is 55 million. So I can calculate my net worth by taking all of my assets. That's everything that I own that has a value that if I sold it today, I could get that value. So let's say I've got, I don't know, a watch these fancy watches that's a, I don't know, I don't actually own this, by the way, but a £50,000 Rolex that doesn't go down in value, that would be in my asset column. Now, on the flip side, let's say I have some credit card debt, £2,000, that I will pay off every single month in full, but right now it's at £2,000, that goes on my liabilities. So assets, liabilities, you calculate them all up, take the liabilities off of the assets, and that is your net worth. Some people, young people, might often find they have a negative net worth due to things like student loans. So let's say you owe £50,000 to the government. That's how you calculate it. Remember, if you've got any questions in the future, DM at That Money Show. We will answer them live on air. Anyway, that's been it. That's the entire hour. I know it's gone super quickly. So I want to thank all of the guests that came on today. We had Claire coming on, as well as Sam from The Apprentice. And you can listen to this show on any platform where you get your podcast from. You can also download the app and look up At That Money Show on social media. I have been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. We have hopefully got you 1% better with your finances by the end of the show, which is right now, and we'll catch you next week.